You ever wondered what your purpose is? Like, what are you here to do on this earth? And why does that even matter? Well, today on Whiskey in the Writings, we're going to dive deeper into what is our vocation? What does the Bible have to say about what I'm here to do and what impact that'll actually make on my life? I'm so glad you've joined us. This channel is all about the seekers, the questioners, those who doubt, those who still believe, but maybe just not like they used to. A place where you can wrestle transparently and honestly about where you're at and all the questions that you have. My name is Joe Oliver, and for the past 24 years, I used to work in churches as a pastor. Now I'm out here making this channel for people like you. I have a master's degree in biblical theology, and if you have questions, you're in the right place. Let's get started. Okay, everybody, thank you for joining me for another episode here, Whiskey in the Writings. It's going to be a fun one today because we're talking about what am I here to do? What is my purpose? What is my vocation? What am I supposed to be doing with my life? And the short answer to that question is simply, you were meant to make and build gardens. What the heck does that mean though? Well, you got to watch to find out as we talk more about this. But before we do, let's get into our whiskey. So for today's whiskey, we're bringing back out Heaven's Door. This is a whiskey that we tried a few videos ago based off of a comment that someone left asking me what I thought about this. And so I went out and bought it and tried it. It's a great whiskey. This one is called Revelation. So Heaven's Door is the maker. Revelation is the style of bourbon that this is made. It is a double barrel whiskey. It's 100 proof. It's got a bit of a kick, and that's okay. And the reason why I chose this whiskey for this episode is because I like that word revelation. I think it's very fitting for this conversation that we're having here today. In the Greek, that word is apocalypse. And the word apocalypse simply means to reveal, to uncover. And so it's getting at a concept that if something is hidden, to apocalypse, it is to reveal it, to show what is underneath what's been hidden. And that's a little bit of what we're talking about here today, because I think this conversation of purpose and vocation has been lost in much of our modern Christianity that tries to spin a narrative that being Christian is all about where I go when I die, instead of what I'm supposed to do here and now. And I think the Bible has a lot more to say about what you're supposed to do here and now than anything it has to say about what happens after you die. So with that in mind, we're going to jump right in and bring a little revelation about what your vocation is meant to be. So in Genesis 1, you have a setup poem. This poem organizes creation, fills creation, and then the end of it is the highlight of the whole thing, which is all about these humans that God makes in his image. And in this process, there is a so that. So if we are, in fact, God's images, what does that mean? What does that look like? I made a video right before this one that talks about that, so you can check that out. But we're more focused on what are we here to do? And there is a so that in this image creation narrative. So you find in Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, God says this. Or the narrator tells us that God created humankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. So there is a designation of both humans, male and female, have the same dignity, image-bearing quality. There's not a hierarchy here. There is not one that is prioritized over another. Genesis 1 is telling us that both humans are, in fact, image-bearers of God. Now, he tells them so, like, then he blesses them. He said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth. So there's this command to go out into the world. Now, let's think about this for a second. If God's command is for them to fill the earth, the question could be asked, where are they then? It seems like maybe they're in a certain geographical location. Then he tells them to be fruitful and to multiply. So there is a indication here that yes, procreation, that the humans were meant to multiply just like every other animal that was created. And yet in this instance, they're also told to be fruitful. When animals multiply, they make more animals. And yet when humans multiply, they also are fruitful in that they make poetry, they make civilizations, they make cities, they make song, they make art, they make more than that. They are in fact being fruitful. They just don't exist as a tree. They actually bear fruit. And this was a command. There is a command by God that the humans were to fill up the earth and be fruitful. Now, are we always fruitful? No. And sometimes we bear bad fruit. Sometimes our fruit is sour or rotten that we produce, for sure. But the original command is that there is a goodness to all of this. Because when you get to chapter 2, something else is happening here. Now, I just want to say this, and we're not going to dive into all the details about this statement, but Genesis 2 is not a look back at Genesis 1, focusing in on just day 6. That's how a lot of people read Genesis 2, and that's a misreading of the text. Genesis 2 is more like a sequel to a movie rather than something that's looking back at previous events, if that makes sense. And if it doesn't, go check out the video that I made on Genesis chapter 2 being a whole different creation story. I expand on that a little bit more detail. I'm not going to do that here. I'm just going to say, if you're reading Genesis 2 to look back at Genesis chapter 1, day 6, to understand what was going on in the details, you're going to miss the whole point of Genesis 2. My hypothesis is that Genesis 2 is telling us what we're here to do and how we should go about doing it. So Genesis chapter 1 at the end sets us up that we are here to do something. There's a so that, okay? So what is the so that? What does that look like? That's what Genesis 2 is setting up for us as a sequel. It's going, okay, the command was to be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth. Let's go see what happens. How does that work? What should we be doing with that? Okay, so Genesis chapter 2 is a different kind of story. And so we should let ourselves see it as its own story. Let's not categorize ourselves through a Genesis 1 day 6 narrative and actually try to see something new that's happening here, because I think there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes that can draw out for us what our purpose and vocation is. So we're going to look at a couple things. One, in the narrative of Genesis chapter 2, God creates a human man, and he makes that person out of the dust of the earth. Then he takes that person and puts him into the garden that he had created. And so it goes like this in verse 15. The Lord God took the man and placed him in the orchard in Eden to care for it and to maintain it. All right. So again, there is something that this human is supposed to do. Now, the next set of stories is really important. I'll summarize it for you. So it says after that, that God looked at the man and said, it's not good for him to be alone. And so God and the man get together and God brings out all the animals and he starts naming them. And the point of the naming is so that he can see if there's someone suitable, someone of the same substances of himself. Genesis 1, the image and likeness are specific words to denote the intrinsic spark of the creator that's in the humans, but we are not of the same substance of the creator. We're not like God in substance, right? We're different. We're flesh. We have the breath, the Ruach spirit of God in us, but we are not of the same substance. So the human needs to find something that is of the same substance, flesh and bone. And what we find is that there is no other animal out there, right? So God puts the human to sleep. Now, this word sleep is not like anesthesia that you go under to have surgery. That's how we read it. And I understand how we get there, right? It seems that the text is indicating that God does surgery on the man. But that's not actually what's happening, because that Hebrew word for deep sleep is more likened to a vision or something that's connected to a revelation, something that's being uncovered so that they can see. So other instances that we see this deep sleep is like when Jacob goes to sleep and he has that vision of Jacob's ladder. Later on in Genesis, another place that you see this actually in your New Testament is when Peter has a vision. Peter's shown this blanket full of meat that's dropped down from heaven. And Peter, in his full Jewishness, says, there's no way I'm going to eat that. Never have I ever done that before. And God says to him, don't call unclean what I have made clean. That word there, that vision word, is the same word in Greek that's used here if you're looking at your Septuagint, right? So these words are connected. And that's important for us to understand, because once we understand that, we can see that maybe God's doing something other than performing surgery. Maybe God's showing the human, the person that was created there with him, that was suitable for him the entire time. So if Genesis chapter 1, here's my setup and my hypothesis, right? I could be wrong, and I'm okay with that debate. But my hypothesis is this. Genesis 1, humans have been doing what God said to do in the being fruitful, multiplying, filling the earth, okay? I think there's a time jump wherein the next set of story, this human that is being formed out of the dust of the earth, is a pulling out of what has existed on the earth, the whatever time jump has happened. Now God is stepping in and doing something new. Now this, if this is shocking to you, hang with me. This isn't new. God, in at least in the narration of Genesis, God continually steps in and starts something new or works his plan forward all the time. I think what's happening, Genesis 1, 31, the humans, male and females, have been multiplying, fill the earth, and being fruitful. And then what God does is he selects out another human, and he wants to do something different with this human. Maybe, now again, we haven't even gotten to Genesis chapter 3 yet, but what if by this point in the story, something had gone wrong, in which God actually is stepping in to rectify that scenario? My hypothesis, again, we can talk about Genesis 3, and maybe I'll make a video on Genesis 3 after this one, because I think there's stuff going on there. But what if, bear with me, God makes his garden, places the human in it, and what if there are other humans already on the earth, and male and female, and what's happening is that God is actually showing that the human has a job to do, but he can't do it alone. So he gives him a vision of the other side of him that was always meant to be there, according to Genesis chapter 1. So what do I mean by that? Well, the word rib isn't like a rib in the human, you know, bone structure. That's how sometimes we think of it, as like as if God literally took the rib. What he did do, this is a symbolic word here, it means side. So your rib cage, the rib cage here, it's the other side, that there's a side of the human that was lacking and missing. And so what God does is he shows him that the other side of himself is this person that he put in the garden with him, this male and female two-part system. And these two humans were meant to work this land, this earth together. I think what Genesis chapter 2 is showing ultimately is that we were never meant to go life alone, and that we were never meant to actually live out our vocation according to what God has for us alone, that you need other people. Now, for all the introverts in the room, or, you know, let me address this, like, well, I don't need anybody. Yes, you do. And even you saying, I don't need anybody, is untrue, because there are still people in your life. Maybe it's a limited number of people in your life, but there's still people in your life that are a part of your life that help you in different ways and at different capacities. So even the introverts. Now let's address marriage. Well, Joe, isn't this about, you know, husband and wife getting married? I do think that there is a undercurrent of marriage here, but I don't think that's the point. All right. I think the point is to try to get us to see that we are meant to work together. Because here's the thing, if the only way that you can exercise this vocation is through marriage, then Jesus failed and Paul failed in your New Testaments. And many other people in the biblical narrative probably failed at this. This cannot simply mean marriage. What I think is interesting is that there's a footnote at the end of Genesis chapter 2 where it's as if the narrator pops in and gives commentary to help the reader understand in their context why certain things happen the way that they do. For instance, in verse 24, after the man wakes up and goes, oh, I see now, the woman is here to help me do this. He says, that's why man leaves his father and mother and unites with his wife, and they become one family. The man and his wife were both naked, but they were not ashamed. So you get this writer who puts in almost like a parenthetical like insert to say, hey, everybody, this is why this happens. And someone who would have been reading this at the time it was written, which was not at the very beginning, right? There's no video cam footage here. Someone's inserting a point of view to says this is why we do certain things like this. But it's not inherently a marriage text, okay? Humans, male and female, do get married. But that's not the point, because there are plenty of times that I am around other coworkers of the opposite sex that help me grow and get better. I have some of my dearest friends are Jenny Florendo, Jen Binford. We have April Coleman. These women are deeply impactful in how I actually live out my vocation. And that's not even talking about my wife and the impact that she has had on my life. The point is here that Genesis 2 is trying to get you to see that there is something you're here to do and that you can't do it alone. So all of that text is my setup for the real conversation that we're having here about what does it mean to have a vocation and what does God expect me to do? And to go into deeper on that conversation, we're going to utilize the I'm just saying portion of this video. And so let's get into that right now. Okay, so I just set up a big part of how we think about this conversation. And there's a couple things I want to draw out of these stories to help us understand what our vocation is. And then we're going to look at what does it look like for us to actually do it. So I said in the opener that our vocation is to build gardens. So here's the thing that I think is happening. In Genesis 1, God creates, which is a statement to say he separates and then he fills and then he puts humans together. And then in Genesis chapter 2, he plants a garden. And in that garden, they're there to work it and to cultivate it. Okay, so what is God doing in Genesis chapter 1? He is creating order out of chaos. So when we enter into the biblical narrative in Genesis chapter 1, the scene that is set up for us is that the world is actually in a chaotic state. It is ruled in chaos. What do I mean by that? In Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, you have, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the watery abyss. So there's this idea here that God made everything, but then there is a chaotic state in that. So if it shocked you to hear that I think maybe the humans were living and that there was the potential of chaos and darkness on the earth in Genesis chapter 1:31, it's because I think Genesis chapter 1 verse 1 sets the stage for that. All that being said, God in Genesis 1 is creating order out of chaos. And to do that, he partners with humans to make them like himself, in the likeness. So whatever it is that we do with our lives, the one thing that makes us more like the Creator than anything else is that when we bring order out of chaos, when we become the kinds of people that are not letting chaos rule over us, we are in fact acting like the Creator. Because if anything out of the gate, we see, what did God do? He separates in 1, 2, 3. And then he fills all of those separated things in days 4, 5, and 6, which is about ordering creation to function properly, not in chaos and not in disorder, but in an order and in harmony and in peace. This is what we call shalom. When everything is working harmoniously with each other, when we are truly at peace because that we lack chaos reigning over us any longer. And so my argument of what we're here to do is to essentially to make gardens like God made gardens, that we're here to do the kinds of things that God did. He brought order out of chaos by planting gardens. And everywhere we go, you have an opportunity to plant a garden. Let's look at Jesus. The life of Jesus is essentially bringing peace. It's the good news that through God, Jesus is actually bringing about shalom, peace. He's bringing order out of chaos. Well, what was the chaos at the time? The chaos is the rule of the Roman Empire. The chaos is the eroding religious system. The chaos is those families that are broken apart by pain and suffering and all kinds of ailments. And what does Jesus do? He comes in, he challenges the status quo of the religious leaders to get them to see that the way that they're leading is bringing chaos, not order, not peace. He challenges sickness and death by overcoming those things. In every instance, the life of Jesus, the death of Jesus, the resurrection of Jesus is all about the ways in which Jesus is showing how to bring order out of chaos. And through him and following him, we actually get to participate in that reordering of the chaos. And so when he says to forgive, when he says to not judge, when he says to turn the cheek, when he challenges us in these lessons about the ways in which we act and react to people, we are in fact learning how to bring order out of chaos. We are stopping a cycle of brokenness, sin, and death when we follow the way of Jesus. And what we are in fact doing is planting mini gardens everywhere we go. And so I think the point in all of this is that if our identity is to be in the image and the likeness of the Creator, then our vocation is actually to do the things that God did. And so I would argue that our vocation is wrapped up not simply about the tasks I choose to do from a 9-to-5 perspective, but all about the ways in which that whatever you do, you are bringing order out of chaos, that you are planting beautiful, good gardens in every sphere of influence and relationship that you have. And so when people will ask me, as I worked with teenagers in youth ministry for years of my ministry time, 24 years of ministry, almost half of that was spent working with teenagers and youth. I would always get this question, what am I supposed to do with my life? You know, what am I supposed to do? What does God want from me? And I think that answer is actually more clear than we seem to think it is. What that answer is that you are meant to make gardens, to bring order out of chaos, to do the things that God does in and around every aspect of your life. So whether you go off to college, whether you stay home or take a gap year, whether you're working at a restaurant, whether you're working in some sort of tech industry business, I think God says to you, go, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, go do your thing, but build gardens along the way. So I think the point of our vocation is that God isn't as concerned with the little nitty-gritty details of what we do, because the first humans, he just says, go fill the earth. What God is more concerned with, are we carrying forward this ordering out of chaos, this bringing life where there is death, this place of bringing forgiveness instead of bitterness, this place of, are we actually building the kinds of gardens that lead to life instead of death? And so this is at the root of what I think is happening. In Genesis chapter 1 and 2, it sets up for us our identity, who we are, and our vocation. And when we follow that pattern and that way forward, we'll actually find a more meaningful and fruitful and blessed life because of it. All right, folks. That is, I'm just saying. Okay, I want to thank you once again for watching another episode of Whiskey and the Writings. This was quite the ramble for me on this one. These are the things I just think about all the time. And I'm not doing a comment on your comments because I haven't had very many comments that I need to address. So that's why we've been skipping those lately. But if you have comments on this, and I'm hoping that I'll get some responses out of this because I've said some pretty jarring things. And if you need clarification, I would ask that you leave a comment about something I said that I can then later on bring greater clarity about, because, again, I've said some things that they're my hypothesis that may not make sense to you. And you may go, well, Joe, what about this? Or what about that? I would love to either need to correct my point of view or give further clarification why my point of view is the way that it is. So please leave a comment. Let me know what you're thinking after this video and what you're feeling after this video. But no matter what, no matter where you are, I want you to know this, that God's story is still good and there's still a part for you to play in it. And that we don't judge Jesus by the abuse done in his name. We judge him by what he actually says. So wherever you're at, whatever you're going through, I want you to know it's going to be okay. It's not going to last forever. And if you need to reach out, please reach out to me. I'm here for you. Thank you for joining me on Whiskey and the Writings, and we'll catch you next time. Cheers.